copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Today we're going to talk about some models of coaching. But before that, I want to touch briefly upon values. We talked, usually talked a little bit in the previous sessions that we had about values and some of the values governing the process. I want to talk about what values are not and then what values are. Values are not systems or programs. The systems or programs are the delivery of values. The way values are delivered, but that's the systems and values are the systems and programs are not the values. They're the delivery system for our values. And also, not necessarily, they're not statement of faith or doctrine. Those are not values. So I wrote here what values are, so it'll be easier for you to follow and write down. So values, I believe, are passionate, non-negotiable convictions that show themselves in consistent behavior. Passionate, non-negotiable convictions that show themselves or express themselves in consistent behavior. Key things, convictions that are expressed consistently in behavior. You know, I work also with companies that all have values on the wall, and that doesn't mean that they are the true values, that represent the true culture of the company, because they're not consistently applied throughout the organization. And I can say the same thing about the church. What are those convictions that we have that are consistently expressed in behavior? And we're going to look briefly at Acts 2, 42 and 47 to see their behaviors and what they valued. So the first thing is, it says that they were devoted to the apostles' teaching. That's what they were devoted to. That was Their behavior. They wanted to study and sit under the apostles' teaching. They valued knowing God's ways, right? They met every day in various contexts, which means that they valued relationships. They prayed together, which means that they valued intimacy with God, right? They gave to everyone who had need, which means they valued generosity. They praised God together, which means that they valued who God was and what He did. Okay, so it's important to understand. And whenever you coach the church planter, when they come up with their values, you have to probe and say, how are these values expressed consistently in your daily rhythm of church life? Okay? So we've talked about some of the values as you presented yesterday. I would say some of the things that we value within M4, coaching, the church planning that we do in M4, is it's a spirit-led. As we said, two questions are important. What is God saying? What are we going to do about it? But first, we must make sure that we hear from God and act in obedience. Also, we talked about trust, honesty, accountability. And I would also add being teachable. That's a key area, because I think when you stop learning, you stop growing. And as a leader, you start dying. So it's crucial that you have a teachable posture, and you can learn from anybody. I'll give you an example. As we were getting ready to plant our church in Romania, I was finishing seminary, and I visited this church planter, and I stayed with him for a week, learning how they were doing things. And his five-year-old daughter, it was Sunday morning, and his five-year-old daughter, Haley, was playing with her toys. And then I said to her, "Hey, Haley, are you ready to go to church?" And then she stopped, looked at me, and said, "People are the church." I had just graduated from seminary. At that moment, I felt embarrassed, amazed, humbled. A five-year-old reminds me of this reality. The church is not a program. It's not a meeting we attend. It's not a place where we go. It's the people of God. That was one of the best lessons I've learned that year. And I have since tried to always think, because language it's important. The language we use is important. And then I always thought church being people, you know. And even now, as we drive somewhere and someone says, "Well, that's a beautiful church." I say, "Do you see anybody?" It's a building. So anyways, the idea is being teachable, learning from five-year-olds, learning from... I go into any environment, eyes open, mind open, to learn. That's my posture. Everywhere I go. So that's an important value. And obviously there are others. Those are some of the key values on coaching. I want to talk a little bit about the various models for coaching. There are different ways of coaching people. And I will not go in depth into each one of them, but I will briefly mention them. The first one that I was exposed about 8 years ago was the Bob Logan 5 R's. How many of you have heard of that? Okay. I'll tell you briefly what it stands for. We will not focus too much on it because we can. There are several that I'll just mention. You can, you know, look into them. I just want to make you aware there are various ways. And even within M4, there are some who use this model. It's totally okay. There are 5 R's that show different stages within the coaching session, right? First one is relate. You build rapport. You build trust. You often start out with, what are evidences of God's grace in your life? Like EJ said, it's important to start on a positive note, celebrating what God is doing in the church planter's life. And oftentimes when I was planning a church and I was being coached, that was the question that kept coming up. I thought it was a great question. I still use it today. What are evidences of God's grace in your life? Then you go to the second, which is reflect. You reflect on previous progress. You reflect on also on what's going on, where you're at right now, and where you want to go. Okay? And then refocus. If this is where you want to go, if this is the goal, what are the different options, different possibilities of moving forward? And then you look at, what are the resources that I need in order to accomplish this goal? And finally, you get to review. Okay, this is what we've talked about. What are you actually going to do? The reason I don't use this model is because I forget one or two of the R's. I can never remember those 5. That's why I don't use it. It's a very simple, practical reason. So I was like, this is, you know, oh, you got to do whatever. The model that I use, it's so simple, it's so easy for me to use, so that's why I use it. If this fits better for you, if you say, man, I can easily remember this, I can apply it, this fits with me, that's fine. So that's why I don't use it. Any questions? Well, I don't want to insist too much on it, because I want to talk about more the one that I believe in and, you know, the way I use it.
Just wanted to show you that there are different models.
Mm-hmm. Nate, you had a question.
Relate what are evidences of God's grace in your life? Refocus, what do you want? Has that been kind of what you want out of this?
Yes, exactly. What is the goal? What are some possible next steps?
Resources, what do you need? Review,
yes.
What will you do
yes.
about it? And
yes.
then what was kind of the reflect is of the past session?
You also can reflect on the previous, what happened previously, and where you're at the moment.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah, and also they're not as clear as the GROW model, I think, but you know, Bob Logan came up with it, and he thinks it's great. So these are the five R's. I will also, you have in your notes, the COACH model by Keith Webb. Right, and I think some of you are familiar with him. I think he's a great guy. Some of our friends, both in the States and in Spain, are using his approach to coaching and his model, and it's awesome. So the COACH stands for connect. I won't write it down. Connect. Again, this is the building of rapport and trust. You connect at the relational level. Outcome. What would you like the goal of this session to be? What would you like the outcome of this? What would you like to take away from this conversation, to leave with from this conversation? Awareness. This is the dialogue about present awareness. Both what's surrounding us, options, obstacles, all are part of the discovery process in the awareness stage. And then course, which is the action. What are the action steps? You capture all the insight into 2-3 actionable steps. This is what I will do. And then the last one, H, is highlights. You review. You present the main highlights. You review the... what you want the church planter to remember from the conversation, basically. Okay? So, the one, and you have the good model that I think is very similar to the GROW model. So I'll just jump to the GROW model. This is the model that we use. This is the one that I find so easy, so memorable. So that's why I decided to use it, and then we decided as a team to let's use this one. Now, there are people in M4 that use others. It's not, you know, it's not about what models you use. It's about if it fits you, if you like it, if it works for you, and if it does the job, you know, helps the church planter and his team move from where they are to where they believe God wants them to be. So the first one, the G stands for goal. And when we talk about goal, we talk about at least 3 stages. You talk about the end goal, which is where do you see yourself 2-3 years from now? Long-term goal. You know, we want to have this vision, team around it, you know. Committed to it, reaching new people for Christ, developing systems of multiplication, whatever it may be. This is what we want to have in 3 years. Assessed people, you know, meet us to be assessed and so on. This is the goal. Actually, you know, you do the assessment before the coaching starts. So in M4, the person has already been assessed and then they start the coaching. And the assessment is very important within the coaching process because you can refer to things that came up in the assessment interview. And it's very useful as you coach the person, the church planter. So this is the end goal, the final objective. And then there are intermediate. Intermediate goals. So if this is 2-3 years, this can be 6 months. Right? So I would say, okay, where would you like to be? Okay, if this is where you want to be 3 years from now. Where would you like to be in 6 months? Right? You break it down into shorter time frames. And then there is the goal of the session. Which is, what would you like to see? What would you like to accomplish today? What would you like to focus on today? What would be a successful coaching session today for you? That's the goal of the session. Now, there has to be alignment between these three. This is very important, and we have struggled with that because teams would say, okay, this is where we want to be in 6 months, but does this goal today fit with the overall goals that we set for ourselves? In M4, and we talk about M4 because this is the process that we're engaged in, they set some goals for 6 months, 5 to 6 months. This is where we want to be. This is what we want to work on. Then during the session, you have to make sure that the sessions consistently move in the direction of achieving those goals. Now, there may be things that come up that you will address, but if you meet with a church planter and then, you know, you visit the team and you're not helping them make progress towards these goals, then, you know, you're not helping them. Which brings me to the point that it's very important what goals they set. Right? Are they consistent with the overall goal? So that, you know the principle of the path. It's the direction you are onto that determines the destination that you will arrive to. And if it's like this way, you will go off. Right? So I think that is very important when you talk about the goal. I'll stop here. I talked. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Yes.
Is there a difference between the goals and the vision?
I think this is. Well, there is a difference if you talk about. We will talk about how to set goals that are smart. And that's the big difference. So we'll come back to that. And we'll see the difference there.
The goals like this, end goal, intermediate goal, do you touch on those every session that you meet with somebody? Do you review them and say, okay, this was your end goal? Or do you just say, all right, first session we're going to talk about the end goal. And then afterwards, when you're meeting regularly, you just focus on session goals.
You keep in mind, especially this, because this is already in alignment. You want this to be in alignment with this. So you keep this in mind with this each session you meet. Again, like things may change, you are aware of that, but you want to go in that direction. And you can ask the question, how will this... The goals of today's session help you towards the 6 month goal that you have established, you know, during our time together.
Okay. Maybe you'll talk about this in tools, but how do you help the person keep track of these? Because they may have, you know, several goals, and they may be personal. Here's some personal goals that I have, and then here's some team goals that I have. Is there something, a structure to help you, the coach, along with the coachee, to keep track of those three-year, 6 month?
Yes, these ones are the ones that we take pictures of these goals. We have them in the file. We have them online, so they can see them, and the coach can see them, right? So they're a constant reminder. These ones are what EJ described. That's the system, the notes that you take, and... And the system that they have, they devise their own, how they keep track of their goals. But you have your own notes. You also, whenever you you report to the coaching supervisor. As I said, there are three. We try to make things as simple as possible. So three things, briefly put, which is celebrate, pray, plan. You say, what was good during that session? What was positive? What was encouraging? Where were they struggling? What were the tensions? Where did they need prayer most? And what was their plan? This is the report that we designed so that it would be easy, but it would be also keeping the accountability between the coach and, you know, the overseer or supervisor. There's an accountability for the coaches as well.
Yeah, I think the vision, actually, the long-term goals are defined not only by the leader, but the whole team in and for. So there should be a written vision, written goal, but actually there are two priorities. You know, is the church really being planted or not? And are the people being reached to the gospel? And so these are two priorities, and you need to keep that in. And but of course, if they make plans for the next 6 months as a team, you know, you should touch, you know, you should talk about it. Are you doing that? Are you reaching these goals or not? Is there progress? So normally you have other processes, you know, next to the coaching sessions that help you to stay on track, and you should keep up with that. So.
Not only that, but these goals are formed by the team, not just the church planters. This intermediate. What you work on is this, just with a church planter.
It can be personal, it can be for a team, of course, that's different.
Johnny, you had
And these dynamics that you're describing, I'm asking, do not change, even if the context is a given denomination within a given mission group, right? Because
the structure.
The coach doesn't set up the goals, right?
Yes.
We said
yes.
That it's the church planter or, you know, the organization.
Yeah, but the coach is has the experience and realizes is this you know, like Ishi said, are we planning the church? Are we reaching people for Christ? Yes, not like, you know. So it help the coach will give some direction. You see, gets into the mentoring role and gives some direction, ensuring that the goals are solid, and helping them move in the right direction. Good questions. Anything else or comments? Some of you are involved in coaching and, you know, you can talk about your own experience. Okay, so this is the goal. This is, you want to know, what are you going to focus on? Simply put, I would say, you wouldn't ask this question, but for me, they're very, what do you want? That's the goal. What do you want? I would not ask it this way, but for me, I have four simple questions that go with these four steps in the coaching process. Now, I want to say something else. You don't think about this in a linear fashion. I'm in goals. Now, I move to, we'll see, reality. That's the next one. And now I'm in reality. You know, and now I move to options. Now I'm in And man, I should go back, but you know, I mean, you know, you don't think like this. You think, you go back and forth at times, and sometimes you do not even start the session with the goal. You may not. You may explore reality. You may start there with what's happening around you. What are the pressures, the concerns that you have, right? You talk about what's going on. Okay? So you may start... And here are questions, as they describe. You talk about, okay, what are risk factors regarding what's happening? What are some of the dangers? What are some of the... Here you also talk about what are some of the obstacles, the difficulties that you encounter. So, the question here is,
second.
This is the second. This is the.
There's no O, right?
GR. There is O.
After
this. So it's grow. I'll put it back on the.
So this is not a good model.
Yeah, the goal, reality.
Yeah. This is not the good model. This is the grow model. We skipped that because the good model is very similar to this one.
This is grow.
Yeah. Okay. You actually have it in your notes.
Yes, I mean.
It's not.
It is.
Good model is that I see.
Yeah, and then it's under that it's.
No, that's the end.
Well, it's under basic toolkit.
Under point three.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Sorry. I skipped. I said that I probably said it too fast. I skipped the good one. Mm-hmm. The good one.
So this is not a good one. Okay. This is a better one.
This is a better one. Yeah. This is the one we use. So basically, this is where you explore. What's happening? What do you want? What's happening? And the O stands for options. Options. From all that's going on, from all the things that we explored here, because you explore different things. What, you know? About what's going on and concerns and fears. What could you do about that? So this is what could you do or what could be done. What could you do? What could be done? So this is where you do a lot of probing, listening, questions, asking. You just had a session yesterday. About asking good questions. This is critical. Exploring as many options as you can. We often stop and say, what could you do? And they give you two. What else is a key question in this? What else? What else can you think of? You know, forcing them to think more than one, two options.
So is this where you would ask questions like, you know, if there is a mistake, then what would you do differently?
Yeah.
How would you change that?
Yes.
What
would you do
if... new perspectives.
Exactly. What would you do if this constraint were removed? Here are some questions. What are the advantages and disadvantages of each option? Because you explore different options. What are the advantages and disadvantages of each option? What factors will you use to weigh the options? How will you weigh the options? What do you need to stop doing in order to achieve this? Oftentimes, that's something that we need to reorganize and realize, man, I can't. Something needs to go before I commit to this. And which route offers the greatest success, the greatest progress of the options? And you see, now you're kind of zooming in to the best one. The best course of action. What option, what route would lead you to make most progress? Okay. I will move to the will and then we'll review the... Because this is not motivation. Will doesn't have to do with motivation. I was describing this to someone and saying, if you have to establish the motivation, then you're like... If they're not motivated, it's very, how will they work on it? And I said, well, there may be times where they're not so motivated and you can work with that and we'll see a tool that we use for it. But will is basically what will you do? If this is what could be done or what could you do, this is what will you do. What will you commit to? Yes.
Get it done.
And you know, you can ask, okay, how, what, this should be as best as possible formulated as a SMART goal. How many of you are familiar with the acronym SMART? Okay, some of you are. I will briefly explain it, because this is where it's very important, both for the intermediate goals and the goals of the session, but especially those intermediate goals, if they are vague, abstract, will lead you nowhere. Like, I like what Bob Beal said the other day, nothing clarifies like measurability, right? So you want to have a SMART goal. This is an acronym, okay? The goal has to be specific. Not just, we want to pray more, right? What does that mean? We want to reach more people for Christ. Amen. You see? Yes, amen. But what does that mean? We want, you see, it's a good desire. But, you know, or it's a good wish. But, you know, if you don't have a plan, it's just a wish. It remains a wish if it's not specific enough. Then you want it to be measurable. How will it be measured? How much? How often? How many? These are questions you answer here. How many people? Over what period of time will we commit to? How will you know you have achieved it? Okay, that's this step. Then the next one is achievable. Setting goals that are not so unrealistic that you cannot achieve them. So if I say, man, I want to, so I have a full-time job, you know, like working almost full-time. I want to meet every day with non-believers, 3 hours a day, every day of the week, Monday through Friday. That may not be achievable given my schedule, given my other responsibilities. You look for, is it really possible to achieve this?
It shouldn't be also too easy.
Yes.
People write plans that are too easy and obvious.
Yes.
There's no stretch.
Yes. There, you know, exactly. It should be stretching you enough, but not beyond your limits, beyond your possibilities.
I think, too, the achievable also brings in the idea of, if you make it large enough, with whom else do I need to partner to accomplish this? Mm-hmm. So bringing other people in, because I can't do it myself, but who else can I rely upon to do?
Very good. Who else can I rely upon if I were to achieve this goal that seems unachievable by myself? Good point.
I'd rather work with someone who has really big goals, but you need to change your time frame or change your, break it down into another piece. So sometimes it's not that the goal, it's not achievable eventually. It's just...
You need to, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not within 6 months or not within
right.
a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, it's got to be relevant. And this is where you bring in that alignment. Is it relevant to the things that you're trying to accomplish together with your team? Does it fit with the overall direction in which you are going? And the last one is time bound. This is the question of when should the activity start? For how long will it last? Time. And by the way, you know, I just said I'm going to put, this is the acronym for GROW. You see, this is very easy for me to remember. I have a bad memory. So I feel like I didn't do such a good job. I didn't explore reality enough. We jumped too quickly to options. Let me go back and explore more of the concerns he had, or the problems, difficulties he had, obstacles that could be. You see, you may be here, and then you say, okay, what are the potential obstacles or potential dangers, potential risk factors? So you move back and forth. Yes.
How can you set goals for the session before you kind of look at the reality? What's happening?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because if you start with what would you like to focus on, he may have already something you said, I really need to make progress on this. But like Iji said yesterday, what if that's not the real issue? So that's why I think oftentimes you may start with reality. Right?
Actually, you start with checking what's the situation from the past, you know, what they have done before, or from the last session. So we actually talk a lot already about the previous months or time from previous session. So and of course you can ask, okay, what are the challenges now? And so the reality, I think, should be more about exploring about what's behind the individual goal that you define, for example. But it's just a, you know, from my perspective, sometimes, you know, don't make it too complicated. Very often it's a basic accountability that is necessary. Really basic accountability. If they do what they promise to do, and if they are making any progress, because very often that's the key thing. You know, of course you can work on their development and key things, but very often you just need to keep them on track doing things that are key and necessary. that's my experience. Sorry.
No, that's good. Johnny, you had a question.
Did you say, or maybe I'm remembering wrong, but isn't it better if you go into a coaching session knowing already what you're going to be talking about? Maybe that could be a possible way to set up goals.
You mean to establish beforehand?
Yeah, like
that's,
if you talk
that's
to
possible.
Manager, hey,
yes.
Well, what are we going to talk about tomorrow morning?
Yes. Actually, this is how I've been coached, you know, 8 years ago. Okay. And it was my coach would send me some questions and say, you know, what are some evidence? I would fill him in so that we would come in with some information. We don't use that. You may use that. That may be even better.
I think it's good, but I think when you start doing it and people will get used to the, you know, you will always repeat the question. You know, so I think they should get used to come and be prepared about what actually God is speaking to me, what is most relevant, what I would like to work on. So and if you have a pattern for that,
But it's not to discount what you said. You know, as I said, there are people who are using that. So
women are better at this than men, but in my experience. But I will often say, if you are in the process when we get to Will, what they're working through, and something happens where you have a click, just send me a text or an email. So it's not long. It's not a coaching session. But when I come to the next one, I can revisit. Okay, you said 2 weeks ago that this happened or that happened, and it makes, because a month is kind of a long time.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't want a book, and they don't expect a reply from me on that. It doesn't create more labor, but it just, when something happens, sometimes it's significant at the moment, and they don't actually think of it then, 2 weeks later, and it's a good thing to go back to. So
that's,
I would
good.
Say, when you have one of those breakthrough moments, or a eureka, or you feel like, ah, I did it, or that changed something, just send a text or a quick email.
That's a good idea.
Just going to say, it's sometimes helpful if I ask them to give me, like, 2 days ahead of time. Just go through these, you know, I'm going to ask you questions about goal, reality, options, will. Just give me, don't take more than 20 minutes and write down the answers to these. Send them to me 24 hours ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It helps that person to then prepare, because a month is a long time, but it also goes fast. And I think it's just a good habit for that person to just, okay, I'm going to take a half hour or 20 minutes. I'm just going to write these things, send them to Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps him, but it also helps me to know how to best prepare.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a personal discipline that you're trying to build into it too.
Yeah, it's good. These are good, you know, good strategies. You can think of even more that work for you that you want to implement, that just change.
Just on kind of a side note, really into the question, because I was thinking about why you would go with goal before reality. And I guess because what you're trying to do, in my mind, is you're establishing the goal first because you're looking at something that you're trying to hit as an objective. And then you're talking about the reality that surrounds that goal. So if the goal is, you know, I want to witness to five people, you know, then you can talk about the reality. Well, tell me about what is the challenge for witnessing to five people, as opposed to just the general reality and then trying to pull a goal from it. Does that kind of make mm-hmm. sense?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, yeah.
Maybe I would suggest to use it just as a method how to take notes from the discussion. So, of course, you define the goal. And then you can write down what's the reality, what's behind, what's important that you have to write down as a coach, what do you hear. And of course, then you speak about options, his options, or things that I have in mind that I can suggest maybe as in a mentoring role. And then, of course, I take notes about what will be, what are the smart goals, what's the time frame, whatever. Just don't stick to it too much.
Yes.
Of course, it's a dialogue. It's not just, okay, so now move to, you know, two options.
Don't be mechanical. Yeah, don't be mechanical about applying this.
But reality is, when you first start using this, you kind of have to be mechanical. You have to kind of think through in order to get into a process. Then
yes.
It becomes natural.
Yes.
But
yes.
Anything natural probably is first
starts
mechanical.
More mechanical. Yeah.
Well,
good point.
Just ask a question, kind of not related to the acronyms. In your experience meeting the church planters, how frequently should you be meeting with them to see the best results? It should be every 2 weeks, once a month, every week?
I would say it would be best if you could meet every 2 weeks. We do it once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Every other week would be a good rhythm,
okay.
I think. But it's, yeah. All, we do this all voluntarily. And sometimes we coach two church planters. So it becomes too difficult.
Especially if you are from the mother church, both from the mother church, and you are in a close relationship, you can have more meetings than if you are kind of outsider.
But wouldn't that, if every 2 weeks, would it be kind of turn it more into mentoring? Naturally, kind of would be.
Yeah, but you need that in the church planting. That's the thing. If you're if you have the other people where you can get that from and interact with, but if the church planter, if the coach is your main source of encouragement, of like helping you move forward, then it's good. Like, for example, that was I was talking to this guy, experienced church planter, and it was so helpful. And we didn't, because of his time, we met once a month. But I wish we met more often.
I have something where we've got 6 months ahead of time, dates on, so we will meet monthly. But then I always encourage him, shoot me an email. You got a question? Send me an email. And I can answer with an email during the month, or we could Skype. And so with some people, it's like two or three times a month.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it just stretches to a month, but there's always that month date that we're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ben, you had a question?
Yeah. As you mentioned, the mother church, if you're closer with them, and that's my position, sorry to come back to that all the time, but if I'm close, we are planting the new church in the same city. The church planter is very young, quite inexperienced, not too many information. Do you think it should be, we could make a plan that, okay, every second week we meet for a coaching session, and every other week we meet for a mentoring session, something like that?
You mean to meet twice a month, one time for coaching, one time for mentoring?
I meet him every week.
Him every week, okay.
But would it be wise to set up a different kinds of meetings? That this week I'm your coach, and next week I'll be your mentor, and the third week I'll be your supervisor.
And the fourth week I'll be your friend. Okay?
I don't know.
you definitely can do that. And you actually, like I, how I described, you may do that in, within the coaching session, change your, if you can afford, I mean, if you meet with him every week, it's great if you can do that. And but be careful, if you're a coach, that means that I'm a coach right now, so focus on just being a coach. You know, because if the issues are deep, they will come back next week. And then you may offer some insight. But, you know, that would help you also as a coach. Because you will say, okay, now I have to be a coach. It's not natural to just sit there when your head is exploding with ideas and you're thinking, man, like this, I have like three solutions for you right now. Right? But here's the thing. It will empower him. Because you'll just... I think that's a great combination if you can do it. Good thoughts. Good questions. Anything else?
I really love the coaching form that Yuri presented yesterday. With do you actually print that out? Like I could make that up obviously from what he showed us. But do you use a form for each coaching session to take notes on? And then I think it's easier too to jump around and to not be so linear if you're kind of.
Yeah, that's what they developed and Iji developed in Czech. We haven't used that, but I used the Grow.
Yeah, but he used it, the Grow, in the form. Like, he had the form.
Yeah.
He showed the sections, and yeah. I thought that was brilliant. Because I'm always just taking my notes on, like, a random page, and it's not categorized. Uh-huh. So I think, the grid.
Yeah.
I thought that was really helpful, because then you could move back and forth between. But I'm wondering, you know, do you have a form made up?
I haven't, but this is good. I haven't talked to Iji. I haven't seen this form. He kept it secret.
It's new. We are in the
brilliant.
Just in the process of creating it.
Copywriting.
No, I mean, we can.
No, copyright. No, copyright. We don't do that with M4.
Come closer, maybe, because.
Okay.
Be sure to have M4 on one.
Okay, man. Or
yeah. You may, but I want to be close so you'll hear from the microphone.
Okay, I will speak loud. Okay, just before maybe I will introduce the coaching practice exercise, I just wanted to maybe show you, because you are not part of the assessment training, but in the assessment training, actually, all the church planters are assessed in these areas, and we call them 3 C's. And so actually, as a coach, if you have an assessment in your country, you can have quite a lot of information, just the basics of the assessment. The assessment that is being taught just next door is based on a what we call proven potential. You are not just searching for church partners with a potential, but with a proven potential. Mm-hmm. Those who actually already have some fruit in their lives, it doesn't have to be in a church planting, mm-hmm. But who actually already showed that they can do things. They can start things, you know, that they have some skills that are they can use in church funding. Not always you will have, nobody has everything. Nobody has everything, but actually you will get a picture of what's the history of the person, what's the past behavior of the person. You know, if what they did in the youth ministry, how they started, how they gathered people around them, how they cast vision for something. You know, and so I just wanted to give you an overview of what areas, we explore or we assess with a person or with a church planter, because it will give you a good picture about them. And actually, in these areas, you can help them and coach them to develop, especially if it's their weakness, and also you can look at the team. So if they are not good at as evangelists, for example, you can see, okay, who else is on the team? You know, who will complement you? If you are not a good administrator, very often you need someone who is good at administration and, you know, leading these things. So there is a calling. So you are actually asking about how they were called to church planting, because it's important, because times are tough sometimes and hard, and they need to know, and also the team needs to know. And of course, you are asking about the fruitfulness in their past ministry and confirmation from others. You know, that's one of the key criteria. Do other leaders confirm that they actually can be good church planters? Or are they just individuals without anybody confirming them in the ministry. I think that's really important. Then there's another C, it's corrector, and a corrector in chemistry. So we are asking about integrity, his integrity. Is there anything? And everybody looks normal until you look deeper. Yeah. So if they are too perfect, just ask more. Then, because the assessment is done with the spouse or with husband, it's important what's the merit of support, because there is a sacrifice of time or sometimes of money, hospitality, all kinds. So what his spouse says or husband about that, and how do they have rhythms? How they protect their marriage, for example, from the pressure. Or have they dealt with depression in the past? So do they have a protection kind of mechanisms in there? Then there is a...
Can I ask a question on that? Have you had experiences in where both the husband and the wife were part of the church plant?
They should be.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, especially if they are not, that can cause a big trouble.
Okay, because that's how we do it. We strictly recruit.
You mean
a single guy, could we... Uh-huh.
No, I mean, if it's a single, it's okay.
Okay.
But, if it's just the husband and the wife is not on board...
Oh, no.
But there's varying degrees of what the wife
would
be on board.
Yeah,
I mean, the wife may be on board at a much lesser level than the husband.
It doesn't have to mean that... I think there should be a support.
Yes.
I'm not against it. I support you in the role. They are in it together if they want or not, So that's, but of course the distribution of roles and ministry and level of engagement, especially on the wife's side, can vary considerably. But there should be unity. The marriage should be healthy. If there are marital problems that are serious, you should warn them that church bonding is putting more pressure on them. So that's one thing. Then there is a chemistry part. Chemistry is about do the church planter fits into the model that he wants to use. Some people are just want to plant churches that's completely different from their nature and their background, what they like, what they love to do. How was the chemistry with theological chemistry in the team? That can be very important. Sometimes people are so different in their expectations, they will never agree on how to do discipleship or what to communicate, what to preach. So is there kind of theological chemistry and kind of a basic also unity in that? Is there a chemistry in the team and in their gifts? Sometimes you have, you can't plant church with five evangelists only. That will kill things.
Nobody to count the souls.
So it's personality chemistry. So, for example, some people use some personality tests for that. And then there's a series of 10 competencies that we are asking about the past behavior. What is their experience? So visionary skills. They had a vision for something. They started something. How did they, what's their experience in that? So, of course, Dietrich Schindler says that vision dies every 30 days. Very much so. So starting gathering skills. It's a lot of entrepreneurial leadership starting things. So what's their track record in that? And how they are good at this? Communication skill. They have to preach. They have to teach. They have to communicate with the team. So how they do it? Evangelistic skills, of course. Discipleship. What's their experience in discipling others, reading others to grow in Christ, to reality of his kingdom. Equipping, are they developing leaders? Very often they didn't have an environment where they would develop leaders. So what's their experience, what tools they would use, how they are going to develop others? That makes a difference. Team building, how the team is really, how they understand the teamwork, how they work effectively with their people, getting the best out of the team, not just be the authoritative or authoritarian leader, just distributing goals. Yeah, multiplication of leaders and groups, do they have any experience in that? It's also important. How they develop in knowledge of church planting, they study? Do they read books about church growth, church planting? Do they just work on themselves? And emotional intelligence, that's just, there are questions about how they dealt with a conflict situation, with criticism, with crisis, when they were just, you know, were really down, and how quickly they recover from that. You know, things like that. So I'm not saying that you have to do coaching around these, but I think this is helpful just to know what areas are just, we suppose, are key for successful church planting. And you can say, okay, maybe we should touch this or this, especially if you know that that's their weak point. That's all.
Yeah. Any questions, comments?
Something that wasn't clear from the other days. Is the church planter's responsibility to recruit the team members?
It should be.
Well, what if someone comes to me and says, hey, I feel called to this, but it's not necessarily the person I would have picked?
Go ahead.
I think the church planter has to choose their team because of the chemistry issue. Mm-hmm. And as Christians, we like to belittle that because we love everybody. But if your team can't work well together, it's basic personality issues.
And you go through this, right? And you go through this. And if the person wants, and then you discuss these things, and they say, I would never, or I'm like this, or I would, you know, it requires wisdom and tactfulness how you deal with that, you think?
I think, too, you may find that you're trying to coach somebody, and you realize this is just not working. And mm-hmm. so these things help us to go back to calling, character, chemistry, competencies, and just evaluate.
I have a little experience in this. In a few years ago, there was a couple who had clear calling. It took them years. They went through seminary, got their education. They were in touch with the union. They were sent for another year of training to one place, then to another place for training for another year. They went through all of that, and then they wanted to plant the church, and kind of that we would be the mother church. They were part of our church before, but he couldn't get a team. So I helped him to get a team, but it didn't work. Nah, that was a mistake. If he's not able to get a team around him, you know, after 2 years I had to close the whole thing because I gave him good people, and he was losing one by one of all of them because he couldn't even keep them, not to get them.
Very, very often what is good is if the mother church has the courage to say, okay, we believe you that you are a good church planter, and you can ask or find 10 people from our church, you know, mm-hmm. and you have a permission to ask people to join you. Mm-hmm. It's a risky thing, but it can work. And of course, they can approach other people from other churches as well, or build their team. But it's important that he would invest in them, and how he invests and how he recruits people. It's actually very interesting to observe.
Well, let me get specific. The reason I ask is because I'm just been debating with a major mission church planting organization within our denomination, where the team is put together by the people that make the assessment and not by the church planter. Mm. And so sometimes the church planter is there with people.
He hasn't chosen.
There is no chemistry.
So
sometimes they bump heads because they have the same spiritual gifts. You got in the same team, you might have two ID, II personalities.
Okay, so.
And finally, it seems like they're getting to the point that they're willing to listen to me and say, maybe we should let the church. I think it's really a power struggle.
Yeah.
Because it means let go of some control. And letting really the Holy Spirit working through the church planter, who has received obviously the major calling to this, to make his own team, so that they can be more efficient.
Of course, it's not just about making a team, but it's actually very often a church planter who comes with a vision, with a passion for an alternative future,
right.
And that draws people to the team, and he has to win them for that, and actually also give them space to create it with him. So I can understand why.
You're denying them a level of confirmation of their calling and their vision, too, because it's as you gather that team that you realize that this vision has merit and it has support. And if they're deprived of that because they're just thrown together, they don't have the level of confidence in the calling and the vision that God has given them that they need.
And what has happened sometimes is that church planters left alone after 2 years.
Yeah. You see, that's you run into those kinds of
things. They don't stick to it. Yeah. And this is a major church planting organization that has planted churches in more than 120 countries using this method. And I'm like,
you know, if you have super spiritual mature Christians, they can stand anything.
and that's what I want to talk a little bit with through this diagram. The two C's, character and competencies, are things that are foundational. Of course, the calling, you see, if you feel called by God, you go with it, and there's chemistry, it's great. These things you got to come back to, and you got to evaluate the church planner very carefully. If you have high character and high competency, there is unlimited potential of what God can do through you. It's amazing. People with high character continuing to grow, and high competencies, amazing skills, great fit, unlimited. Now, if the character is high and they have lower competencies, you see, these are things that you can coach and train. Now, you have to have a basic level. But these are good guys. These are good church planters that lack the experience, the skills, the knowledge sometimes, haven't been exposed to resources, so they're limited. Now, these guys here, low character, low competencies, they're irrelevant. You don't even bother with them, right? This is the trickiest and the most dangerous. If you have guys who are extremely gifted, and I know guys like that, extremely gift, very competent, but low in their character, that's a dangerous ground. And I don't know if you follow, this has happened recently in the church at large, and it's been so sad to see amazingly gifted leaders that I've learned so much from, but in character that has been, it's been low, and that was dangerous, and it fell. So these you can coach, these it's difficult to work, and you have to, it's a really big red flag, the lower the character. And you see, that's what happens often. You look at the gifts, you look at the competency, and you think, man, I mean, this guy is so, has so many things going for him. So, anyways, this is a tool that I have in mind, and I hope it's helpful for you.
It's going to be easy to measure competence.
Yes.
It's less difficult to measure character.
Yeah, true.
Well, that's why in the Bible, when the qualifications are set for a church leader, it's exactly an elder, mm-hmm. which is called in some other places interchangeably as a bishop. One and the same thing. The main thing is the character. It's not
yes.
he's got theological education, but he's got to know the Bible.
I agree.
He's got to know the Bible, there's no doubt about it, but it's not education, and it's his family life, his testimony to the world, and his character. That's the important thing.
Yep. Do you have a framework where you can say to this person, your character is not fit for the role, and I'm going to tell you why.
And we do not evaluate them right away. We are just observe, ask questions. But it's quite difficult to lie when your spouse is next to you. So you can ask questions, okay, about strengths and weaknesses of both. And of course, you can ask other people. You can ask other leaders. How do you see them?
Right. Okay.
Working. What's you know? Actually, integrity or character is actually, you know, how you persevere in doing things that you want to do and not doing things that you don't want to do.
Right.
You know, and so that's important to ask others. Ask their spouse, ask their mother church pastor or leaders who know them. Do they confirm them? Because you need if you don't know them, you need someone who knows them for a longer time. That's it, and I think you can find out.
And you would say, I mean, you would not hide, saying, you know, let's just go. You would communicate that if you come to that conclusion.
Sure.
You can, you know, the an assessment. You haven't been there, but it's like green, yellow, red, light. So where are they? Are they a green? Go forward, move forward. Are they a yellow? Things they need to, you know, work on and watch out. Or red, man, you are not.
Just listen to about their weaknesses that they are